Stardate 96724.1. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name's Mike Moody. With me is
Grant Davis
and
Clyde Haynes.
Tonight we're talking about Season 2, Episode 5 of Star Trek Discovery, Saints of Imperfection. I like this episode.
What do you think of that title?
I didn't even think about the title. You know what? Last week, what was it? Like Flowers for Algernon? What was it?
That's a good one, yeah.
Oban for Chobel or
there
something.
There you go, I yeah. A Chudo for Stamets or something.
I think it's an Obol for Charon.
Yeah, yes. We forgot to explain that episode title on mic. But maybe we'll get to that later.
I bet we forget.
Because I forgot. Yeah.
An Obol for Charon was just like paying your due for the riverboat along Styx or something.
Exactly. Yes. Crossing the river Styx.
The eyes. Yeah. Yeah. The coins on the eyes.
Coins on the eyes. So hopefully somebody looked up this this title or has a theory for it.
Saints of Imperfection is actually a Go West song. Because we're the kings. Oh, because we're the saints of imperfection. It's a terrible song.
I like that.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
This is a King of Wishful Thinking reference. Sorry.
I'll get over everyone. You. Oh, sorry. Sorry, listener.
That was good.
Oh, wow. Thanks, guys. Okay. Saints of Imperfection. We're going to dive into that. First, I want to remind everyone to visit us, please, at StarTrekPod.com. Hey, you want to talk to us? You want to tweet at us? You want to email us? You want to listen to our back catalog where we covered the entirety of Star Trek Discovery Season 1, you can do that at StarTrekPod.com.
Oh, really?
You can.
Hey, is there any way I could financially support you guys, too?
I think there is.
Oh, is that my prompt for me to do that?
Yeah, I was
supposed
to
prompt you. It's weird, I just asked myself a question. Star Trek, you guys can help support the Star Trek Discovery Pod at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Please go there, and you can make a per-episode pledge. So if we post an episode, you guys give us $1 an episode, $2 an episode.
We have a $5 patron now.
Nice.
Hey,
you
Grant,
can do that too.
What happens if you donate $2 an episode?
Well,
what
my
do you
friend,
get?
In addition to just feeling good that you're supporting financially content that you love, you also get access to our super exclusive Slack chat room. So you guys can go there and you can talk with us directly and share theories and tell us where we have made mistakes in our Star Trek lore.
That does happen.
I don't know if we've ever made a mistake so far, but I anticipate one day Clyde will say something dumb about Klingons or...
Lest you forget the Saru episode.
Oh, yeah. I'm still not really sure if we're saying correctly.
I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name. Yeah. Well, yeah, visit us at StarTrekPod.com and donate at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. And speaking of the Slack channel, there's one cool theory that somebody brought up there that I might bring up on this episode towards the end. And before we head out at the end of this episode, we got some new reviews on Apple Podcasts that I want to talk about. And thank you. Yeah, guys, we would love for you to review us. I don't care where you listen, Spotify, YouTube, whatever. But we would love to get your reviews on Apple Podcasts. That'll really help us out.
Hey, I would also like to point out that we're recording this on Valentine's night. We are three married men.
Oh, man.
That have all just said, screw you, wives. But not literally. We're going to go watch Star Trek, and we're going to go talk about Star Trek tonight.
I was literally lying on the couch having a great conversation with my wife tonight. I was holding her close, and then my alarm goes off. It's like, sorry, babe, I got to go watch Star Trek.
Hey, I don't know about you guys, but I made a very romantic dinner, and I took care of all that Valentine's stuff ahead of time so that I would not be in the doghouse tonight.
Oh, man. Oh. I, on the opposite hand, stuck my wife with our two little kids and said, put them to bed. Papa's going to go watch some Trek.
That's commitment.
I broiled some lobster even for the kids.
Wow.
They did not appreciate it.
Mm. That is very romantic, though.
Thank you.
That was Saru's people you boiled. You monster.
You ate some Kelpian flesh. Well, we did make a date to go out this weekend. We're going to watch Aquaman, so that'll be fun.
Aquaman.
Yeah, Aquaman. Okay, Saints of Imperfection, Season 2, Episode 5, The Return of Culber.
Yes!
Yes! I thought they were going to take him away from us again, and then they gave him. Okay, all right. Hot takes, Grant.
Okay. Hot takes.
There you go.
Man, I did not watch like the preview for this episode before this episode, so I didn't anticipate anything like this. Culber popping back in here, I was blown away.
Okay,
and whatever bullshit contrivances they had to come up with to juggle around plot and be like, look, guys, he's back. Just fucking allow us to do this. I'm on board. I'm like, okay, cool, because I was so excited. It started off on such a dark note this episode, and then it just like kept punching with all this bright, cheerful optimism that I'm now associating so much with Trek, and I was just on board for all of that. I'm like, okay, you guys set a weird tone at the beginning. It seemed really bleak, and now it's like everything is kind of working out. And my favorite part is that Spock hasn't showed up.
I told you.
It's just more trolling of Clyde, and I just keep laughing about it. It's so good. What a fun episode.
Yes. Clyde, what do you think?
Look, I'm so jealous of you right now, Grant, because as I would have really appreciated the feeling of like, wow, Culber's back. But as I'm watching, I see in the credits, before they get to the special guest stars, it says Wilson Cruz, and I go, well, that ruined the surprise for me.
But listed as a full cast member.
As a full cast
member. Not even a guest starring.
Exactly.
Or, yeah.
So I knew that...
They couldn't have even held off one episode on putting that credit in.
You know, and that's not the only one. Ash as well, as a full cast member.
They need to get paid.
Like, I knew it was going to happen. Like I was like, okay, yeah, he's going to be here. He's permanent.
What an episode about resurrections, huh?
Yeah. but I did really like this episode, and they had me at the tech. I mean, the communicator badge, the tractor beam.
Oh yeah, that was weird.
The cool Section 31 ship with the asteroid cloak. I mean, from a tech standpoint and an imagery standpoint, I mean, this episode was phenomenal.
Right on. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with both of you. I think the core of this episode, well, for me anyway, was the relationship between Stamets and Culber coming back to life, because as they made that reunion, I realized that I was waiting for this.
Back to life and back to reality.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
But when there was a twist and it seemed like Culber was not going to be able to join us back in our universe, I realized that I had really come to care about this Stamets-Culber relationship. And it makes me want to think about season one, like, The writers and I think the actors did a great job of building this relationship and making these characters characters that I really care about. So they just sold it for me. And like, this episode would not have worked for me if I didn't care about those two getting back together or seeing each other, and they did. And kind of what didn't work for me was Tilly's journey. I love that she was able to help spark the idea to get Culber back into our universe by getting into the goo transporter and, you know, cocoon. It's a goo transporter. So I like that. And all the tech stuff was great. I do have – okay, here's the weird thing. When I saw how ingrained it looked like and accepted that it looked like Section 31 was – in Starfleet, like, everyone's just like, oh, Section 31, everyone knows about this, which is not the case in the future shows. At first, I was a little worried about that, but Discovery has, if it's done nothing else, it's done a good job of, I don't want to say fixing, but, you know, correcting those canon oversights or things that seem like canon oversights. So I'm sure there's going to be an explanation for why Section 31 is more underground in the future. At least I hope there is. But yeah, I dug it. I love seeing Georgiou back. The trolling of Spike is a Spike. I said Spike again. I want to watch Buffy, guys. The trolling that, you know, we're never going to see Spock is actually becoming really funny now.
I had no doubt at whatsoever that was going to be Spock. I knew, like, I was like, it's not going to be Spock. But Mike, I want to talk about this Cobra thing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that we've missed him, right? They haven't filled in the role,
no.
Right? He has this very light, he brings this lightness to what is pretty much a dark cast for the most part, right? I mean, Saru's got this kind of this morality officer kind of vibe, but Culber has always brought this just a great heart, right? This wisdom, I guess, is the best way. And there hasn't been, since he's been gone, there hasn't been someone to step in and fill the void. And we know almost nothing about the medical officer that has replaced him. And I think that's very different when you think about, like, the Next Generation, where when you were looking at, like, Beverly Crusher and the other chief medical officer.
On what show?
The Next Generation.
Oh, yeah.
When Gates McFadden kind of took a hiatus.
Right.
And then they brought her back. Like, you had time to care about both of them. And then it was like, all right, well, now I'm going to go back to...
Pulaski?
Yes, Dr. Pulaski. And so you really actually kind of developed this attachment to both of them, and then you had to switch. We had no such attachment here. And so Culber kind of stepping back is kind of like, great, my friend is back. And so I think that's interesting.
It is, you know, I didn't think I was that attached to Culber until he came back. And I really, part of it is I'm a fan of Wilson Cruz ever since my so-called life. Like, I thought he was great in that. He's popped up here and there in other shows. And when I heard he was going to be on Star Trek, I actually got really excited, because not only is he a great actor, he, you know, typically does represent gay characters on screen very well. And that's what he was going to do here. And I was excited to see that. And of course, when they fridged him last season, it was a little upsetting, but not super upsetting, because I think the next day or the same week, Herberts and whatever the other showrunner's name is, who they've since fired, were on the after show and all over the press saying, don't worry, we think he's going to come back.
We're not burying your gaze. There was a tear, and that tear magically made a mushroom version of him.
Okay.
And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The way he came back, it was a bunch of Star Trek bullshit, but it worked for me. It didn't work for me where I completely bought it, but it worked enough. I'll just say that.
I bought none of it, but didn't care.
You didn't care. Right. Who cares?
I was like, he's back. Like, yeah. Whatever vehicle you need to bring him back, do it. Mm. Okay? That's really what I was looking at.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he made a great impression on all of us. We're all excited to have him back. And yeah, whatever explanation and... the time they set aside while all hell is breaking loose to go,
goodness.
Like, hey, let's turn to the camera and go ahead and do an info dump on you guys about how we're just going to bullshit that this is possible.
Right.
And I'm like, the alarms are going off. The ship's being destroyed. Explain it when you get back through the portal, guys.
Your crewmates could possibly become Cronenbergs.
Yes.
Right? That's what she set it up at the beginning. Well, remember that other ship where everybody turned to Cronenbergs? That can happen here.
It's like a Rick and Morty episode.
It really was. And you're just chatting. Well, let me explain to you how this idea I have is going to work.
And they do it, like, three or four times. And I was so stressed about it. Because I'm like,
Just shut up.
That was deliberate, because I did find myself getting really tense in the final act of this episode.
But mad at them. I'm like, the klaxons are going off, guys. What the hell?
Black alert.
I mean, you know I love Anthony Rapp, but I was just looking at him going, dude, you've got to stop talking. Yeah. Like, you've got to stop talking.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up, Rap. Nice. Okay, let's try to go through this chronologically and fail at it, as we usually do. So at the beginning, we see Burnham rushing to help save Tilly. Burnham showing tons of emotion in that opening scene.
And great running form, by the way. Pocket the chin. She was hitting it.
Not bad.
Great stride. I thought she was just competing in the same half marathon that Tilly was trying to do.
I had the same thought, Grant. Actually, I was like, she's going to beat Tilly.
Like, they're setting this up as something dramatic, but she's just running. jogging, going for a nice stroll.
So, Clyde, what did you think about her bookend narration here?
I hated it.
I knew that. That's why I asked you.
But, I mean, but here's the deal. I mean, anytime you have this kind of voiceover, I think it has to be done so well to even be okay. Most of the time, voiceover is just overused. And I get why you do it, because you're putting us in the head of the person and giving us their inner dialogue. But I just don't think I needed it. I mean, Star Trek is usually really good at doing that, by going personal log. And that would have worked for me. This was just kind of like, all right.
It's like her internal monologue. The piece I liked about it was she ends the beginning of the monologue by saying, even though there's all this uncertainty and anxiety surrounding Tilly's situation, my duty remains, right? She can lose herself in her duty or I don't know. It kind of – she can focus on her duty. And it seemed like everyone on the bridge, especially Pike too, was concerned about Tilly, but they all had a job to do, right?
I agree. I definitely enjoyed or appreciated that aspect of it. It's like I think it was a good reminder that like these people are going to have to be constantly juggling a bunch of drama in a bunch of different areas.
Yes.
I agree that it came across as really – just emo in a way. I was like,
her voiceover,
Burnham just kind of like, words are what define us, and I'm like, well, those are like titles or what define you. I mean, you can
true
officer a little bit more
shipmate,
but I guess it should want to be like but there's just no word for not knowing. I'm like, yeah, there is. You kind of said it.
uncertainty
yes. I mean, whatever, but it's just funny that we were initially presented with a Burnham who rejected all emotion, and now she's just like going whole hog in her Dear Diary about this stuff.
Very much, yeah. I mean, for the first image to be her struggling and just bleeding emotion all over the screen, like that is a pretty stark difference from when we first met this character.
Right. Like I appreciate it because like she has these emotional attachments now
right.
to these people. This is her family in a way that the boring Spock Klingon family. Not Klingon.
Vulcan
family.
She's terrible at this.
It was just like emotionally dead, and that's not what she needs. But it's like it's like we're seeing her kind of growing up in front of us, and like she went through her like angry phase, lashing out as like a young kid, and right now she's in her teenage phase, and she just needs to listen to My Chemical Romance or some shit, and she'll be get through this.
I was going to say The Cure.
The Cure. There you go.
Well, I think what we're looking at is we've got to remember that regardless of how she grew up, Burnham's not Vulcan.
Right.
Right? Like she – where Spock is half Vulcan, Burnham is fully human, and therefore the idea that she could suppress her emotions is just kind of ridiculous. And so what we're seeing here is we're seeing her – really experience and almost embrace her humanity, which is actually pretty cool. And I think it, you know, for as much as we talked last week about, well, is she the sinner? I mean, she was right front and center this episode.
Thank you. Yes.
And I dug it.
I was an advocate for her on last episode saying I do believe she is always the driving force in here. And this episode, I think, you know, not only is it bookended by her monologuing, but she like drove all the action, made a lot of some what can be like heavy-handed like Star Trek points very like clearly defined for a simpleton like myself, especially when she's like talking to Stamets, and then she just like is a force of action. She just like recognizes the situation, especially like when she confronts Tilly in the mycelial realm, and like she's just like, what's the situation? Let's turn around. I got your back, and we're gonna go ahead and confront this monster. Let's go. And I was just like, man, she's great.
Yeah, you're right. And not only that, but her reactions to people like Georgiou and Tyler being on the ship inform Pike's response to them as well. So he's looking at her, trying to figure out
how to deal with this. That was such a great dynamic between all of them.
So are you ready for me to unwind something I said last week again?
Unwind it.
I loved Pike in this.
All right.
Like in this episode, I know I've been kind of on the fence about Pike.
Yeah, you're crazy.
I thought that this episode was everything I wanted in a Star Trek captain.
That he's like perfectly intuitive about everything.
Well, I think he shows that he is the ultimate leader on the ship. And that's what I saw. Like, he's not a passenger anymore. He's in full command. The way he silenced Burnham when, I guess it was Leland was talking, and she's about to jump in, and he just kind of raises a finger and just kind of quiets her. The way he looks at her and says, there's more that you're not telling me. Like, he is in command of every moment. And I was like, that's what I was looking for right there.
And I love the way that he trusts her. Like, he knows that her threat ganglia are up because Georgiou's around, and he knows there's more to the story between her and Tyler. But he trusts her. He's like, okay, I know there's a lot of stuff going on my ship that could be big security risk because these people are here and you know about it, but you're telling me right now is not the time to explain all that. That's fine. I won't give you any shit. I'll put the brakes on. I trust you.
I fully agree. And I think it was a huge strength of this episode to actually have those two characters a little bit apart for both of them to be able to, like, kind of stand on their own. Him without like him and her and their leadership abilities being able to shine without the shadow of the other there is something I guess I kind of needed, because there was a at least in my mind, in my own fan thought canon, like a jockeying for authority, for like who do I want to be the leader in this situation? But when she's just over in the mycelia area, I'm like, Burnham has this. She's going to be able to handle whatever situation and get them out in time, because everyone else is going to be on the other side buying them insane amount of time while Grant panics because of the klaxons.
Yeah, it was a good template for maybe some future episodes, with Burnham handling the, I guess this was kind of an away mission, handling the away mission, and Pike protecting the ship.
And the captain staying on the ship while everyone else goes on the away mission. Makes perfect sense to me.
I was kind of surprised he didn't go, but it makes sense story-wise. Yeah. Okay, so after Burnham talks about, you know, her uncertainty with Tilly, we get more Spock blue balls.
Like, I thought, okay, maybe they're finally going to do it. Like, I thought, what?
No way.
Well, with how the intro set up, they basically did this quick, hey, look, audience, we know that we set up something in the last episode with Tilly. It was kind of fucked up and weird, and she's now disappeared. But we did a quick, like, addressing of that situation, and then we went into, but there's more pressing matters. We have to deal with that, and that's what this episode's going to be, audience. Psych?
No, it's just, hey, here's Georgiou for some fun times.
Look, I am expecting at this point, like, the buildup for Spock has been such a head fake.
That they're going to bring Leonard Nimoy back from the dead?
No, but when he shows up, it's going to catch you off guard, right? Okay. Like, it's going to be a situation where, like, Burnham is headed to the mess hall to grab a burger. She turns a corner and he's standing there. And you're going to be like, whoa.
He's Linus, but with a mask on.
Yeah, it's
I got this at Spencer's, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I've been here all along.
He's definitely not. It's not going to be where you think he shows up. So them chasing down his shuttle and they finally get it. I was like, there's no way. I don't know who's in it, but it's not Spock.
I bet we get Lorca back before we get you're right. Spock.
They did set that up. They set that I'm up all for a little that. Bit, right? I'm all, time travel and
Oh, because it's the tachyon emissions from the Red Angel dust. What's happening?
How big can this cast get? They can keep it's like, just, no one ever dies. No. We'll bring him right back.
Well, I think they're looking at it and they're just going, you know what? I think we had a hit last season, so let's get the band back together.
Like, can I ask you guys, because you do know more about Trek, do people die in this show, or is this like a comic book?
Oh, no, they die.
Yeah, people have died. It's not, you know, Game of Thrones level where they're going to sacrifice, you know, Picard or something. But yeah, TNG had a pretty major death early on that was felt throughout most of the entire series.
You're talking about Tasha Yar?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because she made some questionable choices offset that they decided.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Well, there were some character deaths in Voyager. DS9 starts out with kind of a major character death, but yeah, people die.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like now we have three characters here. And, like, this wasn't a resurrection episode. We have Giorgio, who was supposed to have died, but, oh, there's a Mirrorverse version of him. It's like her. It's like she never died. Right. And, oh, Ash, he, you know, we kind of thought we lost Ash there because, like, of the whole Vok thing. And, yeah. Oh, no, he's just over there on a little away mission. Now he's now back, he's folded in.
Now he's back on the ship and not leaving. Love it.
You're right. Lorca may be back next week.
Yeah. And Culber is now back because of a tear mushroom. I don't know what's going on, but I'm like, I guess no one really dies. I'm sort of complaining, but the same because like there is some impact about the emotional weight there, and like it means consequences. There are consequences, I guess, some of what I'm trying to say. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm happy to have all of them back. So
I don't want to
complain too much.
Well, I mean, I look at it and go, first of all, Michelle Yeoh is amazing. So having her on the cast is fantastic. And as far as Wilson Cruz goes, man, I'm glad he's collecting a check because I thought, man, he was out of the series a little soon.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks for an actor who's like, oh, I've got a job. And like, no, I don't.
He made it through episode 10, I believe, before.
I guess.
But yeah.
He didn't have a lot of screen time, though.
No. So bring him back. Let him collect those checks.
It's funny. Did you know he was going to be back before you saw his name in the credits?
No. I mean, let me say.
He did the press rounds pretty well.
I assumed because of, and they're not doing a great job. I felt like they started off really well being able to keep all these secrets in. And now once they start talking, they give it all away.
Mm-hmm.
The way they discussed him early on, right after his death, made me think, oh, we're bound to see him at some point. It was getting a little long, and I was thinking, okay, but I have always assumed that Wilson Cruz would be back. The minute I saw his name in the credits, I was like, well, he's back.
Yeah.
Today.
CBS All Access released some early photos of this episode, and he was in one. So it's like, okay. And then the day after he started doing press, like there was a big BuzzFeed article about him. And yeah.
Speaking of that, while watching this episode, they did a little like preview of like an upcoming episode or something. And it's got Spock talking with Giorgio on like ship 31, section 31.
I didn't see that. What?
There's this little quick CBS spot. And it shows Spock there like.
Really?
Like coming soon or whatever. And it's like an episode where he's just chilling on her ship.
Spock. Okay.
And with a beard. And he's like chatting with her. And I'm like, what the fuck kind of spoiler thing is that?
Sure that's not Ash? Because there's no way Spock is coming. There is no Spock.
There is
no
Spock.
Figment of your imagination. There's no Spock.
I made this whole thing up just to troll.
God.
I'm kidding. Oh, I actually genuinely saw this.
I don't know what to believe now.
I genuinely saw it. Okay. And I don't understand why they put that in there. It was so weird to me.
It's fucked up. Okay, so Giorgio shows up. She's in Spock's ship, and she walks in like a badass. And I love that Burnham is the only one who keeps the phaser up.
That was great.
Like, I'm gonna shoot you, bitch.
What a fantastic scene.
That was nice.
Wasn't it also cool how Pike like was like they're like, oh no, the ship's gonna escape through that red blobby thing in the sky.
Right.
So he's like, shoot a torpedo, blow it up like a little bit a distance away
before it hits it.
And like as that happens, like everyone kind of looks at him and like. Boss move. That was cool. That worked.
I got to say, I love Giorgio in this role. I was a little iffy about this whole Mirrorverse Giorgio and what we've seen so far. But I think that every story needs an antagonist, right? And we haven't really had one yet.
In this season.
Yeah. And I think she's it. But it's not a pure, like, villain.
Especially by the end when they almost broker a unsteady peace between them.
Well, I was surprised when she kind of pushed to save Discovery at the end. But, of course, it comes back around where, now you owe me a favor, Michael Burnham. Yeah. But don't you think, Clyde, that an antagonist should also have an antagonist, which is why Lorca should be back on the show?
No. Listen, I imagine that Lorca's coming back, but I'm not campaigning and picketing for that one.
Lorca 2020. Wait, 2019.
But I do like the idea that there's this conflict between Burnham and Giorgio, and I think it's really good for the show.
Okay, I think it's good for the show, but this was in my notes. So the conflict that they have now is over what Giorgio is going to do when she finds Spock. So the manufactured conflict between Giorgio and Michael Burnham is now about Spock. Did we need that?
I didn't need that, yeah. Right? I liked everything else. The fact that she shows up mm-hmm. and that they've got this shared secret that they're not supposed to tell, that they've got this shared history that's not quite the same.
It's almost trying to, like they're trying to like force a certain degree of hostility there. It's like, yeah, you know that she was the emperor of a different universe and she's not the same motherly figure that you were used to as your original captain. But I don't know. It's like, do you know enough about her necessarily? Like, I guess you kind of know, like, she committed genocide over there.
Yeah, she
that should be a good enough reason.
She evil, bro.
I'm backpedaling. Okay, yeah. She's bad.
She's pretty evil.
Okay, so...
So Burnham threatens her.
Yeah.
And it was, like, the most empty threat I think I've ever seen.
What did she say?
She's like, if you lay one finger on Spock...
You gonna do what? What you gonna do? Yeah. What you gonna do, Burnham? What you gonna do?
Giorgio and the rest of the audience just went, yeah, what? What is gonna happen?
You can't flex on Giorgio.
Say something. You cannot. Say something, I dare you.
But it was great that Giorgio goes, you know, there's a little bit of that Burnham that I recognize in you right there when you threatened me. I was like, that's a good nod that, like, her... acting like a little bit more tough and cutthroat, she can see a little bit of the Michael Burnham daughter that she lost.
True. Okay, so Giorgio talking to Pike, he obviously thinks she's the Prime Universe Giorgio. And then she's like, I'm with Section 31 now. Oh, Section 31. Everybody knows about Section 31.
What?
So, you know, and Pike tells us it's covert ops, intelligence gathering, threat assessment. So, Clyde. Section 31 was first a concept in DS9 back in the late 90s, and it was presented to us as an extremely covert group that most Starfleet leaders didn't even know about. And there were this rogue clandestine group that did the wet work, did the dirty work for the Federation. It was kind of like you've seen the Firefly movie, Serenity?
Yep.
It was kind of like Chiwetel Ejiofor's character there, where in order to keep the sanctity of this, you know, galactic union, there has to be evildoers like me to make the backdoor deals and to kill the people that are, you know, going to screw things up. So it's presented to us here as an actual department of Starfleet, which does not line up with canon. Does that bug you?
A little, but I'll tell you here why I can deal with it is because I think if you go back like 20 years or 25 years ago and you think about the CIA, was not really talked about, right? You kind of knew about it, or really you think about the NSA, which no one knew about. Now it's super popular, right? It's in every novel. It's in every TV show. You've got the CIA, the FBI, the NSA. You've got all of these TV shows about this stuff. And so it's kind of popular and in the zeitgeist now. I think it's the same way
it's reverse.
It's reverse. Whereas, well.
Which makes less sense.
It's reversed from a timeline standpoint, but it's not reversed from a where we are in real life standpoint, right? So in DS9, it's this thing that you never talked about. Well, now in 2019, everybody kind of knows about it.
Us, the audience, you mean?
Us, the audience.
Right.
I think the question will be, does something happen, and this is what they've been doing.
To drive it more underground.
To drive it more underground.
Yeah, they'll throw in a line here or there, yeah.
Doesn't it kind of seem like we have this Leland character? Like, yeah. Have we seen this Leland guy before?
No. I mean, like last week, but that was first.
Yeah, he showed up a few weeks ago. Yeah.
So Leland and Pike got some history, and they're kind of squaring off like, oh, we knew each other back in the day in college, but that guy was kind of a dickhead, and he could...
And that guy was really preppy and...
Yeah, yeah. It was a little breakfast clubby there, right? I don't know what's going on. But it seemed like the tension that they already sowed between Giorgio and Leland seems like she's sort of jockeying for power over him.
Oh, she's the boss on that ship.
Well, like, I mean, she's going to take over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. He's dead.
I mean, like, by the time they have that spinoff show, she's already going to be the boss, right?
Yeah, totally.
Here's the thing you got to worry about Giorgio, which it's surprising. It blows my mind that anybody would put her anywhere near power, is that you're talking about somebody who in another universe was the emperor of everything.
And
right?
Like eight people.
And literally eight people, right? So you put her in something and think that she's not going to take over? Man, you better lock your door when you go to sleep.
But wouldn't it kind of make sense that if we're now seeing her, like, maneuvering within this new system, this secret organization, that if she were to take power, rather than be the big face of power, she would take the opposite approach in this mirror universe and try and make it a much more secret operation that no one knows about so that it can operate out of sight without oversight.
That's how they can do it. Yeah.
That's why Deep Space Nine, like in the future, no one knows about this. No one talks about it because like they just changed their mission. Like if we're going to be able to do what we do, no one needs to know about us. We have to.
Right.
We already have the cloaking technology, but we need to take that like 10 steps further.
Yes. Okay. The technology. They have the communicator badges that we first saw in TNG. They did not have those in the Kirk era or in the original series.
And Pike's like, what?
Yeah. What the fuck is that?
What was that?
And they have this badass tractor beam that shoots out these probes.
Mm-hmm.
They have cloaks. So did they get that stuff from the future, Clyde?
You know, I don't know. And as cool as I feel when I see it, the problem I have is the problem I have with all of this. And that is what happened to it. Like, if especially with something like the communicator. The communicator is so great. Why didn't we see it in the original series? Right? It's 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
That is, there's no reason why you wouldn't have that. Right? So I struggle with that.
They stole it from the future. They went and zapped on Picard's Enterprise and stole a bunch of communicators.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time we saw that storyline.
Yeah. I mean, it somewhat tracks in real life as well. Like there are technologies that our government will hold on to for decades before they'll allow this to kind of trickle out into the public if they have that, especially in like military ships and whatnot.
Like a drone, for instance.
Drones and
the internet.
Their stealth fighters and all that. Like,
true.
They had these for a while before,
before they
would admit and acknowledge, like, oh, yeah, we have that because they're using these for covert warfare, right?
Yeah, and now we just use drones to fucking spy on our neighbors
and take wedding photos.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. See, what will happen if you give that to the public? They'll just use it for wedding photos.
Yeah.
Communicators will be their version of Instagram.
So we get back to Tilly. We think she's stuck in the cocoon, but the cocoon is a organic transporter or a goo transporter.
Goo transporter.
I really liked how they explained this.
Me too.
In this sequence, it's like, okay, yeah, there's one of these, and her chemical compound, her human compound was in there. When I do a scan, I would be able to see she's there.
Yep.
She's not, therefore I think she's alive. And if she's alive and there's one of these, therefore I can logically deduce that there's a second one. All I have to do is just take some of this, like figure out the compound and track it, right?
And track it I'm over like, there. Yeah.
Oh, that was really succinct. Thank you.
Here's why you like that though, Grant, because there was no klaxons going around while they explained it.
You are completely correct there.
That's true. That's true. It's like, I got all the time in the world to figure this out.
Yeah.
And that was cool, yeah. So my next note says, Tilly got the goop on her.
No, don't read that note.
I guess it is Valentine's Day. It's bound to happen.
Okay, so let's talk about Tilly and May. This was – I was kind of struggling with this a little bit because their relationship is just so unclearly defined. So –
it's weird.
May loves Tilly, but then she's also a nemesis. She also kidnapped her, but then she brings Tilly around to helping her. But then
they're
also at odds again. But then at the end, Tilly misses her because they had this close bond. What?
But she's not real. She's not really May.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. I mean, Tilly's so upset. And I'm thinking, but that's not really your friend. That was somebody impersonating your friend to get you to do what they wanted to do. Like, if anything, you should be like, good riddance.
Yeah, I agree. This was a relationship that was all over the place for what was dramatically convenient for storytelling.
Yes, sir.
And it's a little bit taxing. I was just kind of getting lost in the what dreams may come kind of background. Like,
oh, yeah.
The scenery. I'm like, all right, this like spore world looks kind of badass.
Yeah, it did look cool. What?
Like, if I take some shrooms, it's going to be really badass.
Was it Pandora? from the Avatar.
Oh, right.
Yeah, like the only good thing about Avatar was like sometimes the world looked cool. Yeah, it reminded me of that.
But it was weird to like mix that with this like H.R. Geiger looking cocoon thing too. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like,
it's very Geiger.
Are they that kind of cocoon thing or are these this like koosh ball kind of world?
Yeah. It seemed like they would change shape depending on what, you know, substances they were interacting with or whatever the art department wanted to make that day, which was fine.
What was the deal with May exhibiting very human emotions as far as like I understand like the desperation, the panic of like my civilization's going to die, but it seems like she was appealing to Tilly on a very human emotional level that I'm like,
I need to save my family. You can understand that
from what I'm seeing otherwise of these the aliens who are just used to consuming,
right?
It seemed like a weird stretch for her to already have that shorthand of how to communicate.
Yeah, she didn't even know what crying was in the last episode.
Right.
Was it because she bonded with Tilly and she understood what emotion was more, maybe?
I think they sped some stuff up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree they did speed some stuff up. I think part of it, though, you're right, Mike, she did bond with her. But also, I think what, and they didn't make this as clear, but to me, I walked away thinking that May was her species version of Tilly, right? Great scientist.
Oh, sure.
Kind of all over the place, emotional. That's what I got, that their bond was basically because in each other's kind of world, they were the same person.
Yeah.
And Tilly got the goop on her.
I don't like your show notes anymore.
So Section 31's liaison to Discovery is Ash Tyler. Yay.
How convenient. And it all comes full circle.
How convenient. So are we happy to see Ash Tyler back on the ship?
Yeah.
Sure.
I am. I mean, he was already such a fascinating character to have like a, you know, like here's a human who doesn't have to wear, or here's a Klingon who doesn't have to wear all the prosthetic makeup because we put him in a human form. And I like his character's dynamic with Michael Burnham. I love all the baggage that he brings.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it's kind of fascinating that like the actor's already got to feel like he's got a pretty comfortable cushion of like, well, I have this show and then I can jump right over to the other show. And if that doesn't work out, I can just fall right back into this show too.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, that's a great deal for him.
And he's good. I mean, we were talking earlier about all these characters and the cast just growing, nobody dying, but I want to see him back. I want to see everybody together.
Yeah, I think when he was on Kronos and out of a couple episodes, I kind of thought, wow, what a waste of talent because he was so dynamic, brought something different. I think one of the things I love about this cast is you don't really have two of the same people. And so if you're not going to really develop Bryce and Kira and Owo, then you want an Ash to be a part of this cast and to kind of take some of that weight. So I'm glad he's back.
He's a man of secrets, they say.
Just last week, though, we were still laughing about like, oh yeah, they're going to bring on what's her name, the new engineer, Tig Notaro's character.
Oh, Jet Reno.
Reno. They're just going to bring on her. Like, don't you vet people anymore?
Right.
And then it's like, oh, Ash is back. Yeah. That guy that
killed somebody.
Killed someone. Oh, the guy that he
the sleeper
killed,
agent.
Can we point out is now also back on the ship?
Yeah.
So let's anticipate the drama that's going to happen there.
To that point, the one critique I would have is that it feels like the cast is kind of inconsistent in their appearance. So it's kind of like you've got this cast that is growing by the day, but what happens is you can't seem to have them all on set on the same day. Because I'm thinking, this is an episode where you've got people running around, the ship is falling apart. Where is your engineer? Where is Jet?
Mm, yeah.
Right? And lo and behold, you have a chief of security whose name I still don't know. She's running around pointing phrases at people and looking at Ash weird.
Oh, what's her name? Myra?
I literally have no idea. I don't want to call her braces, but or headgear.
I called her Khan last time and that was wrong.
Oh,
it was something
yeah.
close to it.
Yeah, it's Korn.
Corn. We'll call her Corn.
But there's also Corn Admiral Cornflower
who Cornwall. Showed up again. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's just, it seems like there is this huge cast, and I'd kind of like to get to a place of stability where we're just used to going, okay, these are the people that we're going to interact with. So, I mean, yeah, where was Jet Reno in all of this?
Where was Jet Reno? Where is Jet Reno? Why isn't she here making us laugh? I love Jet Reno.
And where is Rando Medical Officer?
Where's the time? Where's the time to squeeze all them in?
Like, true.
This is... They're getting quite a deep roster here, and yes. And maybe there is a criticism to be lobbed at this show that, like, you might need a culling or take half this crew and throw them on to Section 31 spinoff show or something.
Yeah, that might happen. I mean, we're going to get way more Star Trek shows, so
I mean,
some of these people might spin off.
Maybe, because pretty much everybody on the bridge got a line this week. I mean, alien helmet person got a line, and... Bryce, the communications officer. I mean, everybody got a line on the bridge.
We're in season two. We should start learning their names.
I got Bryce.
Headgear.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Headgear got a line.
Headgear did get a line.
All right. Where are we now? Oh, yes. Do we really want to get into, like, the complexities of the Spore world?
No.
And, yeah. Me neither, because I don't think we'll revisit it again, right? Like, all the complexities of... I mean, I understand that Culber was in there, and he was using what repels the Joffrey, or whatever they're called.
Yes.
To protect himself, because
the Joffrey Baratheons, I believe.
Right. So... Sure, all that worked for me. I don't really care about the details.
You don't think we're going to see the Spore world again?
I don't think we'll, like, go that deeply into how it works. You know, I'm sure we'll see May again.
Do you think that they'll continue to use the Spore Drive, right? Like, everything about this thing seems like it's a bad idea.
Well, I really loved the way they, like, half Spore jumped into the mycelial network.
That looked so cool. That was a terrible idea, awesome. Though.
The special effects of it?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Well, like, what a cool concept. And, like, just having that plot device for part of the episode, I'm like, okay, I love how all of this works, how this is all playing out. I agree that, like, it's a little weird that, like, they're doing that. Because remember last week, like, when May's interrogating Stamets, he's like, I feel bad. I know I was doing something wrong. I shouldn't do that. And then this week, he's like,
hey, let's jump in.
Let's jump in again. But this time, let's do it half so we super fuck some shit up. It just seems like, whoa, dude.
Yeah.
You were just, like, those crocodile tears last week to May.
There was no mention of... If we do this, we're going to hurt them. Nope. There was only mention of they're going to fucking come get us, right?
Well, okay.
Or like, hey, we got to go get Tilly. We don't know what's going on or if she'll be back or whatever the relationship is there. But let's just be impulsive because that's how we humans do.
That's
in Starfleet.
How we do.
I'm curious, when they were getting out, not to jump too far ahead, and the disc, I guess, the Spore Drive disc it's churning real slow. Did you think for a second that they weren't going to get out?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No?
Yes.
I was
the correct answer.
Yes is the correct answer. I was kind of thinking, oh, this might suck.
Well, for a second, like it did give me an extra layer of suspense, which I appreciated.
They're going to go in for another episode and no Spock.
Oh, man. Ay, ay, ay. So, I love that the crew all came together to... find and rescue Tilly.
Like, they all, like, believed in the cause. And,
yes.
And Pike gave a really inspirational speech.
Great
there.
Speech.
Starfleet is a promise.
Yeah.
Starfleet is a promise. Cool. I give my life for you. You give your life for me. And no one gets left behind. I love that idealism. I love that excellence of the core of Starfleet.
I like it. But, I mean, there are plenty of red shirts that would be left behind in the future.
No, they're not going to leave them behind. They're there and they get shot. You know? Come on,
that's a good point.
I gotta drag a body back on the ship.
I will say this: one of my favorite parts of this episode, and I just gotta say it, the relationship between Tilly and Burnham. I mean that solidified, like, okay, this crew is really close.
I'm curious why you, like, hesitantly, embarrassedly said that.
Well, because
what's wrong with that?
I just thought I was going to be alone. I figured you guys were going to be like, ah,
it's Valentine's Day. You can show me your heart, baby.
No, I thought it, I mean, it we've been seeing this crew act as though they're a family. And I think, you know, last week with Saru, and they're like, we're family. And I was like, I hear it, but I don't necessarily feel it. This week, I felt this whole thing. And I think that's because when you go back to season one and Burnham comes on to Discovery for the first time, Tilly really was her first friend. I mean, they've been in this thing together from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And so that meant something to me.
Like, we got a great relationship kind of jump with Saru and Burnham last week, and then like solidifying her relationship here with Tilly, and just that intro sequence, you know, for how I was kind of mocking it as like something kind of like an emo diary thing. It really showed how much she loves and cares about Tilly, and was just running over there like, we're about to go catch this Spock ship, Pike is saying. But she's like, I got to go check on this Geiger thing that just stole Tilly. This is priority number one for me. So I don't know. I agree with you. I buy into it. I like how they've developed that whole relationship.
Me too. And, you know, speaking of relationships, going back to Culber and Stamets, I was a little worried when they found Culber in the network, and you know, he was unshaven and total bedhead, and they
covered in tree bark,
apparently covered in tree bark, which is a choice. I was a little worried that they're going to stretch it out. The idea of, is this not really Culber? What's going on? You know,
and you don't think that anymore.
I'm sorry?
You don't think that they're going to stretch it out anymore?
I hope not, because they seem to wrap that up pretty quickly.
He hasn't said a word.
No, he did.
No, when he talked. I'm saying he's laying now, and now that they brought him back, he's laying in the bed. He's shaven. I mean, we don't know who or what.
Do you think
is.
It's May in Culber's body?
Oh, no.
I don't think that. Well, at least I didn't think that. Thank you for that, Grant. I'm just wondering, is it like he's fully back as Culber, or is he going to be different?
Obviously, he's a little bit different, because when they threw him into the Geiger spore warp thing, they must have run by a Supercuts real quick to give him a haircut.
The goop transport.
Yeah, I'm like, what is this nice clean cut haircut he has coming out of there?
Why not?
What these mushrooms know about like giving good haircuts?
I need one of those to come out with a nice shave. I mean, works out well.
That'll work out.
He looked ragged, and he had all those filings and tree bark all over him.
Yeah, looks good now. He lost an arm in there too.
Oh right.
Yeah, then came back.
It came right back.
Came right back. But I was glad that I don't know. I think it's going to be okay. I'm glad in this episode that they cleared it up for Stamets. That yes, this is Culber. They cleared it up for Culber. Yes, this is really Stamets. Okay, let's start doing the work to get out of here.
That was a pretty touching moment there, where Stamets is recalling like this one event where they go to the art gallery together, and like these little tiny details that meant so much to him as a way to like, just shorthand connect, I am who you think I am.
Yeah.
And kind of build and remind us, the audience, of like what a deep relationship they had. Because, yeah, admittedly, we haven't seen a lot of Culber. And in this season, it's been a few episodes.
And those two, I mean, Rap and
Cruz
work so well together.
They do.
They're a great pair. It's great to see them back on screen together. Okay.
That's interesting, Mike. Now that I think about it, that is probably something that is underestimated in this show, is the pairing that they have. When you think of the pairing between Stamets and Culber, when you think about the pairing between Burnham and Tilly, or the pairing between Burnham and Ash, they do have these tight relationships. And like you said, Grant, last week, I think that Burnham and Saru pairing is starting, like when you look at what we're seeing, there are these binary relationships that are really powerful. It'll be interesting to see how that grows as the show continues.
The show does this really well. There's a lot of shows that struggle to elicit that degree of chemistry between their actors, and I buy it in pretty much all of these relationships. So kudos to them for that.
So towards the end, we were back on the Section 31 ship, the magic ship, and
cool ship.
Captain Cauliflower's there, or Admiral what is her name?
Cornwallis.
Her. And she, we get more Spock blue balls. we're tracing. We got more information about the red signals, and we need to find Spock because Spock knows how to communicate with them or whatever. Blah, blah, blah. Hey, these tachyon particles could be time travel, could not be time travel.
You were pretty bored by this whole scene?
What the fuck are they setting up here?
I have no idea, but they've left it wide open for it to be anything.
Yeah, it's like we haven't, the writer's room hasn't figured it out yet, but we have all these options. So.
I feel like somebody said, you know what? Let's keep this open. We're going to fire the showrunners pretty soon. And so when the new showrunners come in, just give them leeway to do what they need to do.
Right.
I felt like all they were doing here was going, hey, Section 31 is going to work alongside you guys while we build up enough interest in the audience for Section 31 so that we can successfully launch this spinoff series.
Very
not
true.
Needed. I'm already interested.
But like what you're saying, Grant, it is interesting that Section 31 now is going to work alongside Discovery, at least for the next episode, until they find Spock, which they will.
And Ash Tyler is now a main character on your ship.
Yep.
No questions asked because I am an authority. Waggity wag of the
I love the fact that that Leland was like, unless you want Giorgio, and everybody's like, no.
Yeah. Cornwallis is like, nuh-uh. I know who she is.
That's a bad idea.
You don't want her there. No, have the other murderer on there.
Keep her away from being able to control this Borg drive.
Okay, so Giorgio says she doesn't want to hurt Spock. She wants to find him and keep him away from trigger happy Starfleet cowboys, or maybe that's a reference to Kirk. I don't know. She wants to keep him away from vigilante mobs. I don't know. I don't trust her. I think they're really setting up that conflict between Burnham and Giorgio as, you know, and they're putting Spock in the middle of them. It feels like Giorgio has to, I mean, it feels like Burnham has to protect Spock from not only himself or what's going on with the signals, but from Giorgio and Section 31.
I agree, but I think it doesn't matter because we're not going to see Spock until season 3 anyways.
I've seen him. He has a beard.
We've seen the beard. So, come on. What are they doing here? You know, after that whole conflict scene, they kind of do this little montage thing, which have I referenced Lost lately? So I'm going to reference Lost real quick.
So close. We were so close.
It's just kind of like music in a montage scene. It just really felt like season 1 of Lost. Like almost every episode would end with like this montage or like things are going on the island. Yeah. But it's like here are how things are kind of going along on the ship.
And the then fallout.
There's this one scene where you see Tilly crying and Burnham comforting her. And I thought that was a really touching scene and a good shorthand way of really trying to sell that whole like, oh, Tilly and May were super connected in a way that us, the audience, weren't really told beyond one line in this episode.
Right.
But it was just a good, quick, extra reinforcement of that idea that I'm like, okay, now Tilly's got some of this lingering baggage of a lost part of herself, like a phantom limb or something kind of going on.
She lost her goop friend.
Yeah.
Look, I agree and think that one thing that we needed to see in some of the episodes kind of coming up to this is more May and Tilly. And I think what we got was May really trying to establish a connection so that she could use Tilly almost from the beginning and seeing this kind of, you know, almost aggressive personality. But what we did get was this point where we see May comforting or helping Tilly or really something that would cause this great bond other than just being your long lost dead friend. I think if we had more of that, then this scene would have made a little bit more sense.
Agreed.
Totally. I think it's just maybe, you know, she'll miss her and maybe she'll be back.
It was slapped on there. You know what I think? So Section 31 is this weird band of misfits. We have Giorgio, who's this emperor crossed over from the Mirrorverse. We have Saru, but we have Ash Tyler, who is a Klingon human hybrid, whatever, monster. And then we have
No.
I knew it. Weird mycelial network, like corporeal form.
Yeah.
Manifestation of this mushroom spore thingy.
I like that.
As like this.
I like May. I think she's fun to watch.
She's the ingenue
of
the ship, but she obviously has a connection to something greater and more beyond, some kind of crazy insight that might help inform that little Section 31
theme. If we ever need to set up a spinoff for our podcast, I'm talking to Grant. he knows what he's talking about.
No, it can't happen. It probably will happen.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah, she's
good.
What
if they had a weird mushroom spore person there?
I mean, okay. So I could see her. She is basically a spore version of Tilly. So now you've got a Section 31 engineer who's, you know, I could see it. But that reminded me of the fact that the minute that Section 31 was helping Discovery during the jump, I just knew they were going to be taking some readings and trying to figure out how that spore drive worked. So, I mean, now if
maybe
you
they'll
have
a spore drive.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a May on your ship who is technically a spore,
right,
then you could figure out how to make your own spore drive.
Yeah.
It's happening.
It's going to happen.
She's going to be on that other show.
Grant called it.
Shouldn't happen. It really shouldn't happen.
All right. Well, listener, if you have... Oh, wait. Anybody have any more notes for this episode?
Looking at me. I only had one other thing to note. And that was,
knew he did.
I know.
we already kind of touched on it, but I just wanted to say that scene where Culber reaches across to the mycelial thing and his hand disappears was such a holy shit moment for me.
Yeah,
what a badass scene. Like,
it was badass, and it made me – my heart fucking sank. And I'm like, we're going to fucking lose him again. They made me think we're going to lose him again. They sold that.
They got me.
Right? Yeah. I was like, good. There's going to be the consequence, a death.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we have him back too.
Me too. Yeah.
That was that moment where I was like, oh, just – get over there already. Like, stop the talking and move over. And then he sticks his hand, and I'm like, oh, crap. I guess we're not going to get him. And they figured out. I was like, oh, we got him. They did a really good job with that.
They keep doing this bait and switch. They did it last week with Saru. He's gone.
True.
Oh, just kidding. He's back.
True.
Oh, we're never going to get Culber. Yes, we do. You know, I just watched Guardians of the Galaxy last night, and that scene of, like, take my hand in the beginning with his mom, and then take my hand at the end, like, with all them and with the Power Stone. I was like, that's such a powerful scene. This just, like, the act of taking someone's hand, of putting your trust in them, or having them help you across the veil, as it is. It was like, obviously, just, like, already such a powerful scene. But then to see the hand disappear, just, it rocked my shit.
Yeah,
it's such a powerful moment.
Especially the way they set it up at the beginning of the episode when he finds him. He's like, here's my hand. And it was okay, right? Mm-hmm. That was a safe place. But then he tried to lead him across back to the universe he came from, but it wasn't safe. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Okay, listener. If you got as emotional as we did on this Valentine's Day watching this episode of Star Trek Discovery, please reach out to us. We're going to be right back with some really quick listener reviews. I want to touch on these reviews real quick. Okay, and listener, if you want to help us out, please go to Apple Podcasts and review us. Give us how many stars, Grant?
5, but if there's a 6 or a maximum available, just put whatever is the max.
10 stars.
There is never a reason for you to give less than the full amount, because that's just unnecessarily petty and vindictive. Like, why would you do that? Why would you hurt a show that doesn't gain that much?
Yeah.
But it does help us if you give us a 5-star review.
20 stars. Okay.
Anyway, I will come find you at your house, and I will give you a stern finger wagging if you give us less than 5.
Watch out for that finger. Okay, so Kitty...
I don't know how I feel about that.
You like it. Kitty Bing Bang on Apple Podcasts says, the title of the review is Fantastic and Fun. It is an absolute joy to listen to this podcast every Friday morning. I always look forward to the thoughtful insights and fun banter. This is a group of people who feel genuine and fun, and the podcast is a fantastic and easy listen for any Trek fan. 5 stars.
Thanks for writing that one, Clyde.
You know, I try. No, thank you for the writer. I appreciate that.
Kitty,
I
mean, kitty, bang, bang.
Kitty, kitty, bang, bang. I think one thing that's great about this podcast is that I know I can't speak for the rest of you guys, but I enjoy hanging out with you and talking Trek, and I hope that comes across.
It does, baby.
I can't stand you guys. I hope that does come across.
I hate you. Okay.
It's not true.
From Rye Rye, W-R-Y-R-Y on Apple Podcasts. Title of the review is, and this is a fun one, New Listener, Instant Fan. I'm a new listener, but a longtime Star Trek fan. I don't have any Trekkie friends that I can nerd out with over Discovery, but this podcast makes me feel like I do. Hey, buddy. I often find myself verbally responding to something said, only to have another person on the show respond in exactly the same way.
Sweet.
Also, it seems like a lot of people on the podcast... Oh, it seems like a lot of people on other podcasts hate on Discovery because it's not what they think Star Trek should be. Mm-hmm. So it's good to listen to a podcast where they get nitpicky, but because they love it and want it to succeed. So keep up the good work. Side note... All of this is amazing.
I think, why listen to a show that's like down on what you obviously love? I can't imagine watching a show that I don't like and then being like, I need to also listen to a podcast that shits on them. Yeah. What is going on with that person?
Yeah, that's
that probably. Reviewer gets us.
Be enthusiastic and love what you're talking about. Sorry.
No, you're right. Rai Rai has a side note. He says, or she, side note. On one of the recent shows, I heard someone say, quote, handsome mount.
That was you.
That's you.
That's you, Mike.
And I heard someone say, I'd mount him. That was you.
Oh, okay.
I 100% agree. Question, are one or more of you gay? Because as a gay man myself, it would be great to have my new favorite podcast hosted by some family as well. Not gay. Anybody?
I mean, I kind of led this off by saying, like, our wives. But
we're all married men, but we love that everybody listens to us. We, you know, we're inclusive.
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you, Rai Rai, for listening. Thank you for writing that awesome review. All right. Thanks for listening to the show. Visit us at Star Trek Pod and live long and prosper.
Clyde, did you by chance see the trailer or the preview for next week's episode?
I did.
What do you think?
I don't know where they're going.
Isn't it all Kelpian stuff?
It's all Kelpian stuff.
No Spock.
No Spock.
It is all like Saru's world. And I was thinking, here we go.
It's like, just not happening.
Here we go.